I'm going to guess many of us waited tables in our 20s, right? We learned how to fold napkins into fans, memorized the specials, and wore comfortable shoes during long days and nights. Stephanie Dandler's new novel, Sweet Bitter, is a love letter to that experience. The narrator is a 22-year-old named Tess, who has just moved to New York and gets a job in a famous Manhattan restaurant. And that's pretty much all we know about her backstory.
Tess functions a little bit like an orphan, and I think that New York City tends to attract these orphan types. Even if their parents aren't gone, they're estranged from them in some way. And I think that's important because I find when you get to the city, and especially in restaurants, that you're longing to recreate family. It builds these very intense bonds. And we don't need to know anything else about her. She is the eyes to the world, and she's made for the present tense. The whole novel, as I was writing it, everything was immediate and in the present tense.
This is also, it's an intoxicating place to work, literally and figuratively.
Yes.
For many of us, I think, can relate to the experience of working in a restaurant when you're in your 20s and you think you're more sophisticated than you actually are. and there are all these amazing people who are coming into your restaurant and, you know, you're learning so much, but you truly don't actually know who you are. What was appealing to you about using a restaurant as the backdrop for this very kind of personal coming-of-age story?
Well, I had this expertise in restaurants. I had been working in restaurants in New York City for 7 years, and I worked every position from hostess to the general manager and the beverage director. So I had this knowledge that you don't notice your servers. They're invisible mostly. But I would always think to myself as I was waiting tables, if the guests had any idea of the rich life that is going on behind the scene and the drama and the sexual tension and the sadness and the joy and the friendship, I think that those currents add a lot of energy to restaurants. Like, I prefer to dine in places where I can feel the staff a little bit. They have a little bit of a personality. But I hadn't ever seen it written about.
Yeah.
I saw that there was a space to create something there.
So let's talk about sex.
Yeah, I'd love to. Love to write about it. Love to talk about it.
So talk to me about how you figured out technically how to write a good literary sex scene.
Oh my God, I love that question. So yes, sex is the undercurrent of the whole book because what we're really investigating are Tess's appetites across the board and also her becoming more of a woman, this transition from girlhood to womanhood. And sex is a big part of that, or figuring out lust and desire. So I knew it was essential to the novel that I write a sex scene. And you have all of these technical choices as a writer, which is, am I going to fade to black? What kind of language am I going to use? Like, how far am I going to go with this? And there were drafts in which I went much further.
Ooh, and where are those?
Oh, God. There'll be another novel down the line.
Yeah.
You'll know. You'll know when you see them. And then I went back and I thought, what is true of Tess's voice? Mm. This entire book is in the first person. You have this 22-year-old girl. And what is true of her voice? What matches her experience? Sometimes you're on a roll with food writing or sex writing and you're like, yes, the adjectives are flowing from me, but it's not essential. It's not bringing her closer to her transformation. Mm. And so when I was writing about sex, it was sexy because it was sexy to Tess. Mm.
Let's also talk about food, because food ends up being a really important vehicle for the sensuality in this book. And with that, would you mind reading a little bit? I'm thinking in particular of the section where Jake, the bartender who Tess is infatuated with, that may not even be a sufficient word, definitely attracted to, Jake is teaching Tess how to appreciate a very sexy food, the oyster.
Okay, yeah, I'd love to. Jake dug through a wooden crate labeled with masking tape, Kumamoto's. He pulled out two tiny rocks, discarded the debris that clung to the outside. A strand of seaweed stuck to his pants. "They look so filthy," I whispered. "They're a secret," he said, quite a leap of faith. His voice was quiet with the motor of the fridge, and I involuntarily shivered and moved toward him. He pulled out a blunt knife and wedged the tip into an invisible crack. Two switches of his wrist and it was open. Where'd you learn to do that? He pinched a lemon over it and said, take it quickly. I flipped the shell back. I was prepared for the brininess, for the softness of it, for the rigidity and strangeness of the ritual, adrenalized, fiercely private. I panted slightly and opened my eyes. Jake was looking at me and said, they're perfect.
I mean, that is a good sex scene. And they're not even any sex, just
trouble.
Oysters. Yeah,
trouble.
He is trouble,
What do you do with him?
I mean, and we should just, a nod to the plot here. Tess gets embroiled in a very complicated emotional web that involves Jake and Simone. She is a very strong woman at the center of this novel. She is a mentor to Tess, but fill in the contours of who this woman is and what her role is in Tess's life.
Simone is partially maternal for Tess. I think that Tess is looking for a teacher, and she's looking for care, and she's looking for intimacy, and she's looking for knowledge, which the whole book is about her education in a way. And Simone is feeding that quest for knowledge. But Simone herself is someone who has stayed too long. That's what I think of most often. She has stayed at the restaurant. She's been there for 20 years, and there's a lot of stifled or stunted ambition, a lot of failed dreams, a lot of failed romances that have made something about her a little bit toxic. And so she's a really fun character to write, but kind of a dangerous person for Tess to know.
So if this is about Tess's evolution, is she better off for having lived in this world? Who is she when she comes out on the other side?
She is grateful. It does change the way that you pay attention to the world. It does change the way you interact with your senses, this kind of education. And I don't think we know much about what's going to happen to her. And we know that she's going to continue to make mistakes. This is not a linear path that she's on. But she's wiser. She has more knowledge. And that is her power.
The book is called Sweet Bitter. We've been talking with the author, Stephanie Denler. Stephanie, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you so much for having me.